Hey guys, this is Ishai Breslauer and welcome to the CRE Shark Eye Show, where we discuss commercial real estate. On Mondays, we dive deep into an asset class, and on Thursdays, we go into some inspirational stories for the weekend. Can't wait to start. Let's go. Hey guys, before we start, I just want to point out the 6 best secrets for commercial real estate. It's a free download. Go to the text side and you will find it. It has absolutely great information, completely free, how to become a landlord, how to determine the value of a property, or creative financing for commercial real estate. All of it is completely free. Go download it. Also, I want to point out my CRE crash course. It's a 2-week must-have program with a must-have skills for commercial real estate, like investment strategies, the must-have financial terms, how a deal is done. Go take a look at it, go to the text side and click on the link. And now let's continue with our program. Hey guys, how are you? This is Ishai Breslauer, your host of the CRE Shark Eye Show. Today we have Jonathan Barr and we're going to hear all about multifamily, syndication, and a lot of stuff that he is involved with. And I can't wait to start. Jonathan, thank you so much for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Pleasure, pleasure. You know what? Before we roll and dive into your personal story, which I can't wait to hear, just if you could tell everyone, give us a 2-minute elevator pitch of what your business is about.
Sure. So grew up in a real estate family, kind of been in real estate all my life, joined the real estate business, the family real estate business after the last recession. It was a flip business in Los Angeles, during the REOs and all that kind of stuff. So we did about 400 deals in a 10-year period. So we're doing 7-8 homes a month at one point at the height of all that. Did some real estate development, had a small portfolio of multifamily in LA that I leased and managed myself. So I've kind of been in the trenches, bought a few duplexes during that 2010-12 period that appreciated 400% that I've been selling the last year or two now, to 1031 into properties in the Midwest, apartments there, one building in Kansas City, and now 2 buildings in Oklahoma City. And my brother and I have now left that family business at the right before COVID. Not the best luck, but right before COVID, we left and we've been using the funds to buy stuff in the Midwest. And we've recently started to raise money from others because we don't have unlimited funds. And most of the funding for those projects have been coming from people that we've dealt with in the past in our previous real estate career.
All right, cool. Sounds very, very interesting. So we got a lot to talk about. A lot to talk about. You know, let's dive back. You said you grew up into a real estate family.
Yep.
Can you tell the story how your father started it and how you got in? And let's dive back a little bit. Let's get the juice into it.
Yeah, actually, it's my mother that started it.
Oh, wow.
My mom is actually from Mexico and came to this country when she was 19 and barely could speak English. And she started selling houses in kind of like the bad areas of LA because that's where most of the Hispanic people are. And so she went to work where she could speak the language with the people, and just kind of one thing led to another. Started doing some flips, met my parents are separated now. I met my stepdad and they started the business that I eventually joined. Always just been around it, would go to open houses with my mom, they would make me paint houses, de-trash houses. Like our dinners are basically like business meetings talking about deals. So it's kind of in my blood. It's all I know what to do. It's all I've been involved in. And it's been an important part of my life so far.
So it sounds like your mother was mostly involved with the residential part of real estate.
Yep.
The houses and stuff like that.
Yeah, they owned their office and like had like a little retail space, and they've done like little duplexes, triplexes, stuff like that. But nothing larger that we're doing now. But she's always had that, and that side of my family's always had the entrepreneurial spirit and kind of put that in, instilled in that in my brother and I as well.
Tell me something, when she was doing all that stuff, where was the point? When was that point where you said to yourself, you and your brother or both, When did you guys say to yourselves, we want a piece of it, we want to join in? And what was it, post-college, during?
Yeah, it was after college. I graduated in 2008, couldn't find a job. So, and I was broke and didn't really have much of a choice. And she was like, come help us out. I was kind of reluctant because not most people want to work for their parents. And I joined, and it was a great experience for the time I was there. And then it was time to move on and start doing my own thing.
Amazing. And you joined on the residential side, I'm assuming. That's how it started, right?
Yep.
Right. Homes and stuff like that.
Duplexes, small stuff. Yeah.
But it was ownership-wise, acquisitions, or was it brokerage mostly?
Acquisitions, investments. It was never brokerage. I mean, occasionally we would broker deals just because if like we knew someone that needed to buy something or sell something, we would broker stuff, but that was not our primary business.
Okay, so tell me something. Now to the big question. When was the point when you guys decided that you want to get into the commercial side of real estate? And when I say commercial, you know, we all know that residential real estate.
Five or more units.
Yeah, five or more units. When was that point that you said, okay, I'm ready to take over that bigger thing? And what did you go through when you decided that?
Yeah, it's something I wanted to do for a while. But I think we were just so stuck in the rut of like the business of what we're doing. But what happened was I was looking at the equity I have in the property that I own in Los Angeles. And I was like, I'm probably making 3% on my equity on this property. And my wife actually has family in Kansas City, and we were there for the holidays. And I was kind of looking around real estate there, because what does a real estate person do when they're bored? They look at real estate, of course. And started talking to brokers, looking at properties, and started doing math. And I was like, holy crap, I could triple the cash flow, if not more, here. And the duplex I was making $1,200 a month on, I 1031 into a 14 unit in Kansas City, and now I'm making $5,000 a month on that property. And that's that was like a big aha. And I was like, holy crap, I could do this. And it's
how many units was that?
14.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I was like, I got to do more of this. And my brother started talking, and decided that it was time to make a move. It is also challenging to work with family at times. So there was that kind of dynamic with like my mother and I working together, that was like, I felt like it was time to be independent and kind of like do my own thing and set my own rules and be able to make my own decisions on some of the bigger stuff that I wasn't able to make decisions on. So took the plunge. And at first it was tough because, you know, I have a family. I was making a salary at that business. I basically like went from to zero and starting to rebuild. And now we're at a better place. I had my investments and stuff to kind of support me. My wife has her W-2 with benefits and all that. And we luckily bought our house in LA super cheap a while ago. So not a lot of overhead. But yeah, it was tough at first, and now it's getting easier, and we're starting to kind of ramp up at this point.
Beautiful. I love that story. Tell me something. When you got into those 14 units, right? You wanted to buy those 14 units. But at that point, when you're going to buy it, acquisitions, when it comes to the, you know, the multifamily side of things, are very, very different than the, you know, buying a single family home. It's a lot more stuff. It's, you know, going from the process, the numbers, checking it out, understanding performance, going through all these things, showing it to the financier, meaning if you went and you had to sign a loan.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit this experience about this. Oh my gosh, we have to do it, but this is hard. This is hard. You have to learn this and teach yourself that. How did that go?
Yeah, I mean, I had to learn as I went for the most part. But the good thing is this 14 unit was, they had just completely redone it and fully leased it up, and it was in a really good part of Kansas City. So it was a super clean deal, pretty simple. Already had management in place. I kept them in place. The more challenging part of that whole experience for me was I did a CMBS loan, And there's just so much to those type of loans and agency loans, all the reports, the process, the qualification, because like, yeah, I've done hundreds of flip deals, but they're like, well, you've never done larger multifamily. And they like scrutinize me a lot and almost wouldn't even approve the loan, even for a small, like completely turnkey 14 unit deal, which has been incredibly easy to operate. And it's been beating projections higher than what I had. But yeah, that the lending side of it, I think, was more of a surprise and the challenge that I had to get that deal actually over the finish line.
So how did you actually get it done? Meaning with the bankers, what did they ask you and what did you overcome in order to get it done?
I think I just, how my resume and how I sold that story, also having a good broker to kind of back that up and kind of spin it in the right way. I had substantial liquidity and real estate, other real estate assets that made me a really strong borrower. And I think that got me over the hump. And that's another thing too, is I think a lot of people preach, oh, you don't need money to do this business, or you don't need experience. So I was like, you definitely need one of them, and preferably you need to have some kind of cash to get go, or a partner that has some, because otherwise it's going to be really tough to make anything happen, especially in this tough market.
That's right.
Yeah.
Let's go to the point that you have to all of a sudden raise capital, right? It's like, that's a new challenge that you got. And yeah. How did you deal with that? And what did you do? Because,
well, the first one we raised for, the first deal that we raised for was in Oklahoma City. It was a 71 unit that we added a unit. So now it's a 72 unit. But it was challenging. I mean, we thought we could easily raise the money we needed for that deal within our network. And we basically, luckily we had our own funds to make up the difference, but we were only able to raise from two people that we knew. And then that was where the light bulb turned on. I was like, holy crap, I need to like expand. I need to have a social media presence, have a platform, and really start talking to people outside my network to really like make this thing happen, because it's not going to just work with the people that I know.
Beautiful. I love that. And when was the point, you know, tell us about that process. Okay. Social media, you talk to people. How do you talk to them? How do you get them to invest with you? What was the process, the learning process of getting people to come and join you in the deals and putting capital with you, meaning the actual process, the actual, you know, doing of it?
Yeah, I think number one was first choosing one social media medium to focus on. And for me, that was Twitter. And the reason I invested in Twitter was a syndicator that I know here in Los Angeles has raised tens of millions of dollars off even one person that he met on Twitter, because it's like highest net worth of any of the social media channels out there. And so that's been my main focus. On the last deal, raised a good chunk of the money from people that I met on there. And then just having like a really good website, putting out, you know, weekly content, a blog, sending it to my email list, having an ebook on there that people could download for free. I also just added like an interactive map that people could sign into for MSA data. So even GPs or LPs could sign in and they don't even have to like use it to invest in my deal. It's just kind of a benefit for the community as a whole. And hopefully that kind of spurs some interest in what we're doing as well.
Beautiful. Twitter, very interesting. Why Twitter? Yeah. What's in Twitter that got you into it?
There's a really interesting real estate community on there where everyone shares what they're doing and is very open about what they're doing and is very helpful. And there's a lot of investors on there looking for good people that know what they're doing. And you could, in, I don't know how many characters, I think it's like 250 characters or 180 characters. You really have to be precise with what you're putting out there, because you don't have a lot of space to say what you got to say. You could do threads. So I do that. I'll do a thread of many tweets where you kind of could do a story. And it's just been really fun. It's simple. It's easy to use. And there's a lot of like tricks and ways to kind of try to beat the algorithm to try to get your tweets exposed the most as possible.
Wow. Very, very, very interesting. and exciting too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been fun. I have almost 5,000 followers on there now.
Amazing. That's amazing. 5,000. Yeah. Wow. Tell me something. Deals. Getting into deals. What type of deals you guys like to go into?
So right now we're mostly buying places that are pretty stabilized and pretty good shape. They're just not being operated efficiently. So the first deal, we reduce expenses by 25%. We added extra unit, we reduced staffing. And that was kind of our value add there. On the next deal that we did in Oklahoma City, we bought it from the original builder, no software, no marketing online. So just putting in those processes, also reducing staffing there is going to make a huge impact. We're able to push. And then we're also pushing rents a bit across the board, but it's more like operating it better, reducing expenses, making it as efficient as possible, using systems, technology to improve the way things work and make it a good investment for us and our investors.
So if I understand correctly, you know, you have those guys who are coming in and they say, okay, I'm looking for value add deals, even a core plus deal like you guys are going for, which is today I think is the best strategy. I believe this is the best and the most correct strategy today. Why? Because the market, you know, for where the market is going.
The market could turn at any second at this point, the way I look at it. Yeah.
100%. And that these are the safest types of deals that you could go after. That's why a lot of people are going for them.
The other thing too is like the value add that needs a lot of improvement and construction, they're pricing that into the price that it just doesn't make sense for the risk you're taking on. Like if I'm going to, I don't mind taking a big construction project on, I've done hundreds of flips and done, huge construction projects. But it's just not worth the risk for the pricing that's out there for that right now.
That's a great perspective. Really great perspective. So when you look at the numbers, when you look at the challenges of a property, when you want to buy a property, you say, hey, I found gold. Because in your case, you really have to know your stuff in order to find where I can dig out those 25%.
I know every line item and how I can improve it to almost the penny, for sure.
So give us a few examples to enlighten us about your knowledge and your process. Like, you don't have to go through everything, but, you know, like two or three things that how you find, okay, this is it, and I'm going to attack it from that angle and do this and that.
Yeah, probably the number one is just payroll and, you know, what staffing do we actually need? Can we maybe share a manager or a maintenance person with another property around the corner that my manager manages? So I'd say that's number one. Insurance, trying to find ways to get creative with that, to bring that down a little bit. Marketing costs. A lot of times there's a lot of operators that are paying for all these different websites, so able to cut on that. Also water conservation would be another one. And then other little things like, on the first deal we did in Oklahoma City, there used to be a pool. It was a pool room that wasn't being used. We converted that into a studio, which brought us another $650 in rent a month. And that wasn't even part of the deal. That's something we found later. And so that's about, if you take a 6.5 cap, that's pretty normal for the area. That's about $125,000 in value right off the bat there that wasn't even accounted for in our underwriting. A lot of it is a lot of little things, but a lot of little things add up.
That's true. That's absolutely true. And it sounds like, because you're in California, right? You're in California, and this is Oklahoma City. How do you manage that gap, the distance, the geography, as well as the management, meaning do you use third party, you guys do it yourself?
We do third party, and our manager is also an owner operator, so that he has that mindset, which is very helpful. They have about 1,500 doors that they're managing in that area, and they've been doing a really good job. We have weekly calls with them to go over our KPIs and all the reporting. And we've been down there at least once a quarter, if not more, to look at our properties that we currently own and look at new potential. So we've gotten to really know the neighborhoods, gotten to really know the expense ratios and what kind of is the, what we can improve on in those areas. And that's like another thing too. I think a lot of people try to work in a lot of different markets, but I think it's crucial to focus on at least a couple markets where you really get to know all the sub markets, even block to block. Sometimes things change, or one side of the freeway to the other, and knowing those little nuances is hugely important.
Huge.
Yeah. It makes sure you don't F it up, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. You mentioned water. You said water conservation. Can you explain a little bit about this?
Yeah. Switching out toilets, shower heads, faucets, all that to use less water. And in turn, because we're paying for water, if we could reduce our, you know, $30,000 or $40,000 a year the water by 25 to 40%, and you divide that by a cap rate, ends up being substantial.
I love that tip. This is beautiful. So you guys going on and you're finding those Core Plus deals and you're making acquisitions, interactive, but then there is COVID. How does that mess up your plans, especially when you're in California and you like to go and learn new markets and understand the area and go and see the KPIs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. You have to rely on other people, but in the end of the day, in real estate, we have to be there also. Yep. How did you guys manage throughout COVID? What'd you do?
We traveled the most we ever traveled during COVID, actually. And it was pretty nice because it was cheap and there was no one in the airports, and it worked out really well. That was one benefit of COVID, is that travel was really easy during COVID.
You guys are brave and I love your enthusiasm. It's great.
Yeah. I mean, we were careful. Obviously I was masked, I had gloves. Like I try to like avoid even going into too many units too, because I don't want to be exposed to as many people, obviously. But yeah. And then like the impacts of COVID were minimal at our properties. And the reason being is, what we focus on too is buying the affordable option in the better areas, so that if people are not going to be able to afford to pay us at our property, they're going to have to move to another area. They want to stay in the better area, so they're going to find a way to pay you. And there was a lot of government support and charities and whatever. So most people that were having issues were able to get covered. And if they didn't have a good reason, we still were able to evict them if we needed to. And we tried not to evict because we understand, you know, it's a tough time. But if the people that we did evict were just troublesome people that were having issues with other tenants, then it was just better for the community as a whole.
So it sounds from all those explanations that you guys are going for C-class. Is that correct?
I would say it's C-class, but in like B- or better areas.
Yeah. Okay.
That's solid C. I mean, the last deal that we bought in Oklahoma City, I would say it was more like a B, because it was like 80s building. And then there was one 90s building and one 2012 building. So a little newer.
Nice. A good mix.
Yeah.
A good mix. Let's shift gears a little bit. I want to talk about the team. You guys are going in, you're doing it yourself. Everybody needs a good team when they go for multifamily acquisitions.
Yep.
Can you tell us a little bit about what type of team you guys, how you developed the team? Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, sure. So my brother's my partner, and we worked previously in the other real estate family business. So I was acquisitions and he was doing sales, the broker. So he's doing all the negotiations and marketing and all that stuff for selling the properties. And so I'd worked with him for years and I knew how he worked. And obviously he's my brother and I trust him with my life. So that's pretty crucial in a partner. And then the rest of the team is like our property manager, our lawyers, our CPAs, our contractors, vendors. And we spend a lot of time trying to foster those relationships and make it friendly too, so they enjoy working with us. We're likable with them. Yes, they're working for us, but we're working together. It's a team effort. And we need to acknowledge people and keep people accountable too, and they need to be kept accountable. But yeah, so I guess we essentially outsource most of the team, but my brother and I are doing this full time, and we have a breadth of real estate knowledge. And the other thing I like about having my brother as my partner, or just a partner in general, is like, I think sometimes you can get too optimistic trying to make a deal happen, and having someone there to kind of check you to be like, no, let's look at this. Or I think you're pushing too much on the rents here, or whatever, is huge. I wouldn't do it any other way.
Sounds beautiful. I love that.
Yeah. Plus it's fun to travel with my brother and like joke around with him in the car and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Brings you back.
Yeah. It's fun. We enjoy it.
Thank God.
Yeah, we like being around each other, which I know that doesn't work out so well for some people and their siblings and all that kind of stuff.
For some people it does, yeah. For some people it doesn't. But I think when it does, it's such a beautiful thing to work with a brother that you actually, a sibling, that you actually get along with, and it's great, and you can be partners with. I think this is beautiful. This is something that years from now you'll be able to tell about and
And I don't have to worry about with my brother, if you have a partner that you've only known for like a year or two, you might have some doubts, when with my brother, I have no doubts.
Absolutely. Love that. Beautiful.
Yeah.
So what are your plans going forward, you guys?
Our plan is to build to 1,000+ units, buy 3-4 deals a year. And we're trying to keep things actually relatively small. I mean, that's still significant, but we're not trying to get $1 billion in assets. We want to keep things relatively small so we could actually know our investors and know them by name and face. And we have some cash flow goals we want to get to, and then kind of see where it goes from there. Maybe eventually become an LP ourselves, where we're just investing in other deals and just kind of take more of a step back at that point.
Sounds beautiful. I love that.
Yeah.
What tip would you give someone who wants to get into multifamily acquisitions and they want to get in and they're in the very beginning of it and they want to go and start up? What's the tip you tell them?
I would do a house hack where you're buying a fourplex and you live in it and you rent out the other units and you're managing it yourself. And I think that's how I started. I bought a duplex. I lived in the front house, rented out the back house, sold it 10 years later. And that's helping fund the deals I'm doing now. And then if you want to scale faster, that's obviously like a small unit count, find a mentor or someone that has more experience and has some capital behind them to kind of even work for them for free and help them out and learn from them and try to be of use to them where they want to help you.
This is beautiful. And you know what? The beauty of it is that so many people are giving advices and every advice is a little different than the other. It's because people had different experiences, and that's how it is. Yeah. So I love that.
I've always had a mentor or someone that I could ask questions of or run things by, and it just validates what you're doing. Even if you know what you're doing and you're doing everything right, just to have someone on your corner and telling you, yeah, you're doing it right, or no, you're not, and you should do it this way, and makes you kind of think twice about certain things. I think it's really important.
Wow. Let's wrap up things. And before we do, I would like you to tell everybody, you guys can see the links up, you know, above, below, wherever they are. But if Jonathan, if you could tell everybody where they can find you, how they can get to you, contact you, go ahead.
Yeah, you can look me up on Twitter at JB2 Investments or go to our website, jb2investments.com. We also have an ebook on there for free. It's just /lower our website. And it's an ebook about taxes, real estate incentives like 1031 exchanges, accelerated depreciation, investing with retirement money. I wrote it myself. So
beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. You guys heard it. You guys can use someone's knowledge, someone with a vast experience. You can use their knowledge and learn a lot more.
Yep.
And obviously, Jonathan Barr and his brother are doing great. That's how it sounds like. And you guys can check out and see if you want to invest and join them with their fantastic stuff that they're doing. Yeah. Jonathan, Thank you so much for being with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you. And one more thing too, I'm always happy to help, even if it's not someone that wants to invest in our deals. If you're trying to do this too, or just want some advice, you know, I've had a lot of people help me along the way, and I'm happy to kind of pass it along, I guess you could say.
For sure. That's beautiful. I love that.
Yeah.
You guys, I'll see you on the next show. Jonathan, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Hey guys, thanks for joining me in this CRE Shark Eye show. I hope you enjoyed it. And go subscribe, download, do whatever you guys need to do. And I'll see you in the next episode. Take care of yourselves.